Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everyone. How are you? I hope you guys had a wonderful week. We're back for another session. We're going to get a little more into credit, and hopefully we'll be able to address any questions. Let's start off with any questions. Anybody have any questions from our last week? Anyone? Okay, wonderful. All right, Larry, let's go to the next slide. Next. Let's just start off, as you know, just to recap, we're talking financial literacy and really to increase. What have you missed last week? You can download the sessions. I've uploaded them to my podcast stream, Two Black Guys with Good Credit. So wherever you listen to podcasts, you can just go to Two Black Guys with Good Credit and you'll see class 1 and 2. It's there for you to review and you can catch up. Once again, the goal of the program is to make sure that we teach you financial literacy and you learn how to leverage it into your lifestyle, and it helps you achieve your personal goals. All right. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so I want to go through specifics of a credit report. We talked about credit last week. We talked about the 3 different credit bureaus, which is Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And I know for a lot of people, sometimes they don't see their first credit report until there's an issue. So I wanted to go through the different terms of a credit report and what the different things mean. So when you look at a credit report, it's not intimidating. It's not overwhelming to you. You're comfortable with it. So this is a sample credit report, and it's from Experian. I'm going to pull it up in my book because it's kind of cloudy on the screen. It's called Experian. Experian, as we know, is one of the credit bureaus that collects data, collects information. They don't provide you the credit score. The credit score comes from FICO, what we talked about last week. They're just collecting it. They're just collecting all the information, everything that's reported on your credit report. Everything that's reported on you, it's tied to your tax ID or social insurance number. So if you look at point one, I don't know if, can you guys read the slide properly? Can anybody read it? Can you guys see it?
Yes, we could see it, Sean.
Okay, great. So let's get some class participation in. Somebody read number one, what it says. Want me to choose names? So I choose names, participants, let me look. Okay, let's start with Alondra Hernandez. Read number one.
You will need your report number to contact Experian online by phone or by mail.
Correct. So if you have an issue with your credit report, this is the first line you want to look at. It has your name, your date of birth, your tax ID, and something so simple as a middle initial could be off, which could trigger that you're getting other people's information in your credit report. So you really want to pay attention to make sure that if your middle initial is wrong, there could be a problem with your credit report. You want to make sure that your tax ID is right and your date of birth is right. Okay. So that's the first thing you want to look at when you're looking at a credit report. Number two, index. Navigate through those. These are just all hyperlinks you would see if you're looking online. So you'd be able to click on it and it would bring you right down to potential areas of your credit report. Somebody read number three. Let me choose. Christy, number three. Are you there with us, Christy? Okay. Let me go to Christine. Christine, are you there? Christine, Christy, Brendan.
It's blurry. It's hard for us to read it. We can't read it because it's so
okay,
blurry.
You can't read it? All right, so let me read it then. Number three is items that potentially that creditors may view as less favorable. It includes the creditor's name and address, your account number, account details, status. So this section is formerly negative items. So it means things that appear on your credit report that are not working in your favor. And the reason why they're first, because those are the things you kind of want to pay attention to see if they are correct. So question for you, which I asked last week, see who was paying attention. If something is on your credit report that's negative, like showing that you missed payments on a certain credit card, can those be taken off your credit report? Can they be removed?
I would think if they're incorrect.
No, if they're correct, you did miss the payments, but it's a negative. It's negative towards your credit report. It's negative towards your credit score. Can it be removed?
No.
So what if you meet these people that say, oh, I can fix your credit. I can get rid of that. I can make that go away. What do you say?
They're scamming you.
They're scamming you. Exactly. Because it's your report card. Remember, at the end of the day, you know, what grade you got in that class is the grade you got in that class, and you can't change it. What you can do is moving forward, you can do better in your other courses to bring up your average, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to pay attention to these negative things. And I personally, and I think everybody will have an experience where there's probably something in your credit report that just isn't true. And just isn't true could be like you made a payment at Macy's and Macy's didn't record it properly, or Macy's reported as late and you know it was on time. This has happened to me many times. So you have to go back to Macy's and you have to say, look, I made this payment on time. I need you to correct it. And they will correct it and they'll forward the information to the credit bureau. So sometimes it could be a payment that was late, that was on time, but they categorize it as being late, or sometimes categorize it as being missed. So you have to look through every line and to make sure that if there's something negative, that you're understanding if it's true or not true. And the example that they have here is the county clerk. And this example is, I love this example because it's what people really don't understand. You could be, if you have an outstanding ticket or you have an outstanding debt, somebody sued you and you decided to avoid them and not pay, and they were able to find your tax ID and put a lien on you, that is going to affect your credit report. Like I have a landlord when I was renting my last place of business for, he decided not to give me back my security deposit. I had to go to court, I won the case and everything like that, but he still hasn't paid me back my security deposit. I think he spent it. So I went down to the county clerk and I put a lien on him. So whenever he applies for something, wherever he goes, this will follow him. I may never get the security deposit back, but it'll affect his credit because it's showing there in his credit report that he did not pay me back.
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Yes. Can I jump in real quick?
Absolutely.
One of the other things you have to really, really look at your credit report is for medical bills that you paid and the hospital did not credit you for it. So they're notorious for not giving you credit for what you paid. Excuse the background noise, but you have to make sure that you keep your receipts so that if they put it on your score, because a lot of times these departments are not in the same room. And whenever you make a payment, you hold on to your receipts for medical. And I've seen that happen numerous times. And my own experience with liens has been me not paying my state tax properly. And they slapped a lien on me, which lasted, as Sean said, it lasted lasted 6 years. They gave me a little leeway because of my score was high. So it dropped my score, but because I had excellent payments, they gave me a little leeway, but I still had to wait 6 years, over 6 years before I can get that off.
Yeah. Another example is my friend's mom. I was helping her helping her through the process of buying a home, and the bank will give you an interest rate based on how good your credit is. So she was able to get a really good rate because she had good credit. But coming time ready for her to close, her credit score went down, and she couldn't understand why. And then the bank was saying they can't honor that initial interest rate that they gave her because her credit score dropped. And so when we looked into it, she got ill one time, and the ambulance came to pick her up and brought her to the hospital. And she's actually, she works for the government, so she has great insurance, but something mm-hmm. happened where the hospital didn't record her insurance properly, and they billed her back, and she was having problems trying to get the bill reversed, and it affected her credit because it looked like she missed the payment. So I initially had to go to the hospital, present her insurance card, and resolve it that way to bring her credit back up. And we didn't actually close on the property until a month later, until her credit score changed again. So yeah, a lot of times people are not paying attention to medical bills and understanding that definitely affects your credit. So it's something to really pay attention to. Let's look at point number four now. Indicates the current status of the account. Very important. If it's past due in 30 days, 90 days, and some people may, like, I've seen people come like, oh, you know, if I don't pay it, they're just going to write it off. Yeah, they will write it off eventually. They'll write it off as bad debt, but that will follow you for years. So it will show. So for example, if this example in number four, past due. So if you had a payment due, let's just say today, October 23rd, and you didn't make the payment, what you have before anything gets reported to the credit bureau, you have a 30-day grace, like I said earlier. So anything that you do negatively will not get reported as long as you resolve it within 30 days. So when you see something reported, it'll initially show 30 days past due. Now let's just say you decide still not to pay that same payment that was due. On the 60th day, you'll have two incidents now, one 30-day past due, one 60-day past due for the same credit line. And on the 90th day, if you go 3 months, you'll have three incidents on that same credit card or whatever loan arrangement, whatever you're outstanding on. So if you're not making payments in time, on time, it could hurt you multiple times and drop your score down multiple ways. So waiting for the credit card, and I've seen many people do it. It's like, oh, I'm not going to pay this credit card. I'm going to let it write off. It will carry through for you, especially young people. You don't realize when you're ready to do something mature, like buy a house, even apply for certain jobs, this could definitely affect you. And credit card companies and lending institutions are always open to make some kind of arrangement and payment plan. Yes, Jeff.
So my question is, Sean, what about all the people who's may not have the money to pay their credit cards and may have lost their jobs if they worked for restaurants or couldn't pay their rent or their mortgage since June? Now, would that affect what shows up on their credit score?
Well, good question, because that's a really relevant and current question for today. So there's two ways in which you can do it, all right? So a lot of credit card companies and mortgages, since COVID happened, they were offering what we call forbearance, meaning that you can delay making payments and they'll give you a few months before you have to continue to make a payment. And some have done it where they're not going to charge you interest, and some have done where they're just accruing the interest and they are going to charge you interest. It all depends on the lender. I know American Express was good at not charging interest, and then MasterCard was going to charge me interest. So now question is, does it affect your credit? So I was doing a refinance on one of my properties, and I was going through the bank, and it came up that I had like a forbearance, meaning that I had until actually it was September of 2020. If I wanted to make a mortgage payment, I didn't have to make one for like 3 or 4 months. I got it as more of a safety net in case things got tight, but fortunately enough, I was able to continue to make payments. But my lender, the bank, was telling me that they were declining a lot of applications, a lot of credit applications, because of people deferring their payments. So it wasn't affecting your score. But remember, people can look at your credit report and see what's happening, and then look at your score and make a comparison. So my score was still high, but it showed on my credit report that I had a forbearance until September 2020. And if I didn't show, I had to pull my statements out and show that although I didn't have to make my payments, I continued to make my payments. So I think lesson learned, if you can continue to keep paying your bills, I would continue to keep paying them. But if you need to use the recourse of forbearance, we're meaning that you're going to defer your payments until the credit card company or the lender says you have to start repaying, then I would then do so. But always be proactive. If you know you can't make a payment, if you know something is happening in your life, then it's these, you know, the credit card companies, and they can work with you as long as you call them before the payment is due rather than after. So it's once again, being proactive about it. Does that answer your question, Jeff? All right, let's go to number five. Number five is, who can read number five? Can you read it now? Can anybody help out? I'm going to go to Destiny. Are you there?
Accounts in good standing.
Okay, what does it say beside accounts in good standing?
List accounts that have a positive status and may be viewed favorably by creditors. Some creditors do not report to us. So some of your accounts may not be listed.
So what does this mean in a nutshell, Destiny?
That your account is like fine, you pay it all on the phone.
Yeah, you're doing all the right things. They have no issues with you, right? So let me just ask you a question. If there's something missing where you know you have an account, like just say it's not showing one of your credit cards, but you know you make those payments on time, you do everything right. Is it important for you to have it show on your credit report?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because it will help your credit score.
Absolutely. So do you see why they put the negative stuff before the good stuff?
Yeah.
Exactly. Why is that?
That's the first thing you'll see.
Right. Why is it important for us to see the negative things? Why is that?
So that you could take them off.
You can address them, right? And how do you address them? What if you see a problem with, I don't know, let's say with your Chase credit card, it says that you missed two payments, but you really didn't miss two payments. What are you going to do? You got to hire somebody to resolve it? What are you going to do?
No, contact the credit bureau and contact Chase. No.
Exactly. And provide the proof. And the proof would be proof of payment, right?
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. Good. You just saved yourself a lot of money in case you have a problem. Let's go to number six. Who can help me with number six? Deshante Bryant. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said, Deshante. You have a lot of background? Okay, let's go to Maria. Maria Ramirez. Are you there?
Myra Ramirez.
Apologies. Number six.
Okay. So it says type. Account type indicates whether your account is revolving or an installment account.
Do you know what the difference is, Ms. Ramirez?
Maybe. Hold up. Revolving, maybe, like, is it a recurring, maybe some type like that? I'm not really sure.
Okay, so let me help you out. So revolving means something where the balance is not always going to be the same every month, and it's your payment, therefore your payment amount is going to change month to month. What type of lending instrument would be like considered a revolving? An installment is the set amount is the same every month. You locked in for 3 years, you're paying X amount of dollars every month towards this loan. So give me two examples of what those could be.
Maybe a revolving, maybe like when you have a lease or something.
Lease would be more or less the same payment every month, right?
But sometimes some, like, isn't it like, I know some leases, like every 1 year or like every year it goes up or something.
Usually you're kind of committed to that amount, but I understand where you're going with it. What about a credit card? Is credit card revolving or an installment loan?
I would say it's an installment, maybe because you have to pay a certain amount.
Well, it would be a revolving because the amount could change because you have a limit. Let's say a credit card can have a limit of $1,000, $500, $10,000. Sometimes they're unlimited. So every month you can put whatever you want on that card, correct? Therefore, the payment amount would change every month, correct?
Correct. You're right.
So that would be revolving. And then installment would be something of like, who can help me out? What would it be? Give me an example of what an installment loan would be.
I think Sharia said it on the chat. She said an example is a mortgage.
Exactly. A mortgage would be more or less an installment loan where you're paying the set amount fixed every month. Car loan, what is that? An installment or revolving? Anybody can help me out? Is anybody in the chat can answer?
Sharia said installment. We got a couple installments.
Exactly. And so which do you think is riskier? A revolving from a bank's perspective, which is riskier? A revolving or installment loan?
Revolving.
Exactly. Revolving is riskier. So because it's riskier to the bank, what do you think the bank charges a higher interest on, a revolving or an installment loan?
For a revolving.
Exactly. So that's why credit card rates are usually higher than like a personal loan or like sometimes even a mortgage. So here's a little trick that you know. It's called debt consolidation. Anybody know what that means? Debt consolidation means when you have multiple different debts, could be credit card debts, could be personal loan debts, and you put them all together under one umbrella to have one payment. So versus multiple payments, you're going to have one payment. And usually you would move revolving debt into an installment debt. Does that make sense? Because then you'd have a one set payment and a lesser percentage. And a lot, this simple exercise, a lot of people don't do and wind up paying a lot more in interest every month and finding it hard to get out of debt. But if they realize they could just consolidate it, put all the debt together on an installment loan and make a monthly payment, it would be far cheaper and they'd save a lot in interest. Does everybody understand? For some reason, I'm not able to see the chat, Larry. I can't see the responses, but.
You got to get your control panel. It's on the side, wherever you have your control panel, up top or in the bottom or whatever.
Yeah, not seeing it. But does everybody understand how that works?
I think someone.
Can you repeat it one more time, please?
Yeah, no problem. So everybody understands the difference between revolving and installment loans, correct? Everybody say yes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so, and everybody understands what one of the students just pointed out, that the interest rate would be higher on a revolving loan versus an installment loan because it's more riskier to the bank. It's not controlled. The amount can change every month. It can fluctuate. We agree to that?
Yeah.
So the installment loans generally have lower interest rates. So if you have like multiple debts, so even multiple credit cards, let's call it, outstanding, and it would be revolving loan, you're paying essentially a higher interest rate. And if you can put all those loans together, which you call consolidate them, which is put them all together under one loan. So if you have $500 owned on your Chase credit card, another $700 owned on your Citibank credit card, another $300 owned on your Barclays credit card, $400 on your Macy's debt, you can put all those debts under one payment. And you would call, that's called a debt consolidation. So you would go to your bank, maybe your bank of Bank of America, and you say, hey, I owe Macy's money, I owe Citibank money, I owe Chase money. I want to do a debt consolidation. And they'd be like, okay, we're going to transfer all of that debt onto one credit, onto one personal installment loan. Is everybody with me?
Yes.
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 That one payment would cover all of those four other cards that you had outstanding, which would be a lesser amount because the interest is going to be less. And instead of multiple payments, you would make one payment. And that's called debt consolidation. And so most people don't realize that can save them hundreds, in some cases, of thousands of dollars every month. Understood?
Is it difficult to get debt consolidation? Because is it difficult to get debt consolidation if you're kind of, you know, if you're in this situation where you're kind of drowning in different debts? You know what I'm saying? How does your credit have to be in order to get this debt consolidated?
One thing about America, criteria are different across the board. Every bank has different criteria. And even I'm actively learning. Like I was always dealing with like tier one banks, Bank of America, Citibank, Chase. But your neighborhood banks, and even if you're part of a union, they're a little more friendlier. You know, they may make exceptions more than the larger banks. So, and then even online searches, online bankings will as well. Banks don't like to see people in desperate situations and they don't like to do business with people that look desperate. But there's always an opportunity where you can try. I would start with your local bank where you have the relationship with, tell them what you're doing. And most of them will require that you close out those other accounts. And so like, if you're going to transfer high interest rate credit cards, they want you to close out those credit cards. And to be honest with you, it's in your best interest to do that, because I've seen people do a debt consolidation, consolidate all the debt, and then run back up the credit card. So now they're in a worse position than they were initially, because now they have this personal loan and then they have these credit cards maxed out again.
But I have a question.
Yes. So I'm going to answer your question 1 second. So I would more or less say, yes, you can do a debt consolidation regardless of your situation. It's really just kind of figuring out that bank or institution that will allow you to do that. And I would start with the bank where you have the deepest relationship with. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I was wondering about the credit aspect of it. If your credit is kind of in the tank, maybe. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times when you get to that point where you're kind of underneath all of these separate debt, your credit sometimes is in the tank. So when you go to the bank, it's like...
if your credit is in a tank, because like say it's your Chase card is maxed out, it may be Chase's best interest to give you a personal loan to pay off that high interest rate so you can pay back the debt that you owe them, you know? And it's really having a conversation with the bank and telling them what you're trying to do. You're trying to do a debt consolidation because, you know, they're built for people that are in stressful situations as well, to bring down their carrying costs, to bring down their payments so they can make it affordable and pay back the debt.
Gotcha. And what are the typical, interest rates? Are those typically higher?
No, like I said earlier, installment loans are considered lower interest rates than what credit card rates would be because they're considered less riskier to the bank.
Okay.
And every bank has different rates, so I would shop it around. And you know, one thing I would say, you never should be married to a bank. You know, you're casually always dating a bank. And if the bank is not giving you what you want, you break it off and you go to another bank. You know, we all have this misconception that when we sign up with a bank at a young age, we're committed to that bank for life. That's not true. You know, you can bring your business elsewhere and be bold as to what you want. I'm looking to do a debt consolidation. I'm looking to bring these cards over. And don't say it like the bank is doing you a favor, because it's business. And that's really how you have to kind of carry yourself when it comes to bank. Not like they're doing you a favor, like you're adding value to them. And you're ready to take this step. You're ready to make this payment. You're ready to do business with them. Because at the end of the day, banks are for-profit centers, not nonprofits. So they're there to make money. They're there to make business. So it's for you to be confident and explain to them your situation and what you're trying to do. And can they assist you with that?
And Sean, I'm going to... For the sake of time, I think we should keep moving. I know a lot of people are going to ask questions on this, but going back to this installment versus revolving thing, if people have any other questions, I think we covered this last class. So if you weren't there, you know, the recording is available online. So there's a whole page on types of credit. So feel free to look at that.
Exactly. Okay, so let's go to the next one. Let's go to number 7 we're at, right?
Yeah.
David, if you can read number 7, that'd be great.
I can see it. Okay. Requests for your credit history, also called inquiries. Requests for your credit history are logged on your report whenever anyone reviews your credit information. There Correct. Are two types of inquiries. Number one.
Hard and, yeah. Yep, keep going.
Inquiries resulting from a transaction initiated by you. These include inquiries from your applications for credit, insurance, housing, or other loans. They also include a transfer of an account to a collection agency. Creditors may view these items when evaluating your credit worthiness.
Okay, let's stop right there. So I had this situation come up with me just about a week, 2 weeks ago. So I'm doing a refinance, like I mentioned earlier. And Goldman Sachs, who I invest with, they did an inquiry on me. And the bank that I'm borrowing from, TD Bank, pulled my credit report just before we're about to close. And they said, why is Goldman Sachs checking your credit? And that was a soft inquiry. I didn't apply for anything with Goldman Sachs. I wasn't obtaining any kind of credit. But it came up in this same report, like Goldman Sachs is looking into my credit report. And, you know, if I was seeking other credit from Goldman Sachs outside of this loan, it could have stopped me from getting the loan. I had to tell them this was a soft inquiry. Maybe they're checking to make sure my status is okay, my credit was okay, but it's a soft inquiry and it was not something that I was seeking. I was not seeking credit. So you have to pay attention to see who's checking out your credit, and you can't control it, but you can all explain it like I had to do if the question does arise. Hard inquiries, what we talked about last week, is when you initiate the inquiry. And you know, banks don't like to see, like in your case, David, you said, like, if you're looking to do a debt consolidation, like I mentioned the last class, I wouldn't be letting people run my credit report immediately. I would shop around. I would tell people openly, here's my score. Here's my situation. What can you do for me? And once somebody gives you the deal that you're looking for, then I would say, okay, run my credit. Like before somebody runs my credit, they already know, I already explained to them what my credit is going to be, where I'm going to lie. It's not a mystery. I want you to tell me what we can do business wise before you run it, because I don't want a lot of hard inquiries on my credit report. Make sense? Everybody with me?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to personal information. CJ.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Read out personal information. You there, CJ? Okay, let's go to Emmanuel. Emmanuel, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, read out what personal information means.
The following information is reported to us by you, your creditor, and other sources. Each source may report your personal information differently, which may result in variations of your name, address, social security number, etc. As part of our fraud prevention effort, a notice with additional information may appear as a security precaution. This is the social security number that you use to obtain this report is not displayed. The name identification number and address identification number are how our system identifies variations of your name and address that may appear on your report. The geographical code shown with each address identifies the state, county, census tract, block, group, and metropolitan statistical area associated with each address.
Correct. So this, once again, is very important to make sure that whatever your current address is correct, your date of birth is correct, your name is spelled correctly, your tax ID is right, because any little thing can trigger and throw it off. Believe me, there's more than whatever your name may be, whatever your date of birth, there's somebody out there that may match very close to you. It could be off just by a middle initial. And then all of their information may come onto your report. All right. So it's very important, once again, to make sure that this section is 100% accurate, not 90%, 100% accurate. Okay. And plus two, when you want to pull your credit report, they'll ask you questions of give your last current address, give this, give that. And if it's, and they're looking at this, and if it's off, you may not be able to, your credit report may not be able to come up in the way that you want it when you're applying for some kind of loan or something like that. Sorry, somebody had a question?
Oh, this is Sean. I just wanted to add, someone mentioned on chat, they were asking about debt forgiveness. So I want to be clear, debt forgiveness and debt consolidation are different things, right, Sean?
Correct, absolutely.
Is when, well, you have an outstanding loan that basically someone decides that you don't need to pay anymore, right? That's why you're forgiven from paying the loan.
But that's different than a write-off.
That's different. A write-off is you can't pay the loan. A forgiveness is someone forgave you, someone allowed you to not have to pay the loan anymore, right?
So question then to everybody, will debt forgiveness affect your credit in a negative, positive, or will just in no way? Tiana, how will debt forgiveness affect your credit?
Some people on the chat said negative.
Okay, well, so debt forgiveness, people are saying, will affect your credit score negative. So what about debt write-off, where the company is saying that they're just tired of running you down, you're not paying it, they're going to write it off, and they're going to send you to collection agencies and let collection agencies try to recoup, you know, pennies on the dollar. Will that affect your score negative or positive?
We got a bunch of negatives.
Okay, so what's the difference between debt forgiveness and debt write and then write-off? Because I've had debt forgiveness before with my student loan.
Debt forgiveness is positive, right?
It depends on the arrangement you have with the person you owe.
Correct. So a forgiveness is, like Larry said earlier, the key word, forgiveness. That's not going to affect your credit score in a negative way because you've come to an agreement with the lender. They've said, you know what, you don't have to pay me back this money anymore. Not because you didn't make payments, not because you were not, you know, following the guidelines of our arrangement, just that I'm forgiving the amount. So that's not going to affect your score negative. Now, if they have to write it off, yes, that will affect your score in a negative way.
And a consolidation, you still have to pay that debt off, right? You're just putting it under one account. So that's very different from forgiveness. And do not get those two things confused.
Is that clear? So when someone offers you debt forgiveness, I don't want you to be like, I took this course, I'm not taking it, I don't want it. No, someone offers you debt forgiveness, gladly accept it. If somebody says they're going to write off your debt, then, you know, you need to make a payment arrangement. You need to, because I've seen people that, and you're young people that says, oh, I just wrote it off. And then when they get older, it comes back to haunt them. Is everybody with me? Okay, so
yeah.
Okay, great. So we're going to bring in a couple. And the purpose of this, I know it's hard to teach this in a Zoom-like setting, but really the purpose of this is that when you're able now, you have the confidence to pull your credit report and review it on your own and not think that even if you do need somebody else to help explain certain things to you, I always say, like, whenever I reach for help, you should always be able to speak on it still intelligently. You should be able to drill down to things and ask specific questions and know certain things about the credit report that you can help. If anybody's talking through it with you, you can ask intelligent questions and nobody can take you for a ride telling you, like, oh, something that's negative that you know you miss payments, they're going to tell you they're going to move away for you and give them $500 and they'll make it go away. Make sense? So let's look at an example of a credit report, okay? So we're looking at Advantis, right? And it pulled the credit report from three places. Where did it pull it from? Who can help me?
TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax.
And what are they? What are they?
Three major credit bureaus.
Exactly. And what do? Do they give you a credit? What's their function?
To rate you, your credit, to rate your credit.
No, they don't rate. Who rates our credit? Who gives us a credit score? What's the name of that company?
FICO.
Do they let you know FICO. What goes on your credit or what's
right. Right. They're just collecting the. They're just collecting the information. Right or wrong, they're just collecting it. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Cool. Yes. So does it seem okay that what's TransUnion coming back at your credit score as?
730.
And what does Experian say?
732.
And what does Equifax say?
734.
Is that seem right? Seem normal that they're all three coming with three different, well, two out of the three are the same. No, all three different scores. Is that okay? Or should we question it?
It looks about normal. It looks right.
Right.
Why is that?
Because it's close. At least they're off by like 2 points.
Exactly. Okay, so let me give an example then. So what if TransUnion was 730, Experian was 732, and Equifax was 600? What's the story there?
Based on last week, we need to go and check to see what is going on, because something's really off if it's that much of a difference.
And where is it? Where do you think the error is coming from? Is Experian and TransUnion correct? Is Equifax wrong, or vice versa? Where do you think the error is coming from?
Maybe Equifax, maybe something's
right.
Missing, or
right. Exactly. So you need to inquire. You need to pull your Equifax report and see what the problem is, and compare it to Experian and TransUnion and see what the issue is. Correct?
Yes.
Exactly. Correct. You do your own troubleshooting. Okay, let's. Let's go through a couple of the lines so you can just notice how it would look, come up. So we're looking at Chase, for example. Everybody see Chase?
Yes.
What type of credit is this? What type of loan is this? Can anybody tell me? Can anybody help me? Is it? Can you make it a little clearer, Larry? Or is that as clear as it can get?
That's as clear as we can get.
Now, can you guys read it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What type of, what's the outstanding balance on this loan?
5379.
So yes, you want to compare, and what date was this, was this opened?
10/2013.
And when was the last time somebody used this card? You used this card?
12/2013.
Any missed payments in 30 to 60 days?
No.
Anything past due?
No.
And what's the credit limit on this card?
89,200.
Exactly. And what's the highest the card has ever been?
74,000.
And what's the balance? What's the current balance now?
Actually,
15,000.
Maybe. Yes, Larry?
That is, the line up top is a summary of everything.
Oh, the line up, he's absolutely right. My apologies. He's right. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, you got to go down a little.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm saying you're yes, and I'm wrong too. Okay, so what's the highest, what's the limit on this card?
There's no
50. Highest is 50. Yeah, so the highest, what's the highest the card has been?
5,499.
Correct. So let me ask you a question. Does this card seem like it's in good standing?
Yes.
Exactly. So let's go back to the summary that Larry just mentioned, which is something good to look at. It shows how many accounts do we have there?
2.
No, 33. See, number of accounts?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
33. Number of open accounts, 26. Number of delinquent accounts, 0. So this person, are they doing the right thing?
Yes.
And now look at their credit limit on all the summation of all the cards. Thank you, Larry, for pointing it out, is 89,200. The highest they've ever gotten it to is $74,682, right? The balance currently now is 15,893. So we talked about the last class desperation. Now, if you're a lender and this person comes to you for a mortgage or auto loan, looking at just a summary, do they look like someone that's desperate?
No.
Do they look like somebody that's managing their credit good?
Yeah.
Do they look like someone that you'd want to do business with?
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the story. That's it. That's the story. That's what lenders are looking at. Like, what is the probability that this person's going to, if we give them money, are they going to pay us back on time? What's have they done historically to prove that they can be do that? This person looks responsible. So this is somebody that, look, that handles credit well, that doesn't max out his cards, that looks like he's able to handle. So yes, we would lend him money, regardless gender, creed, race, color. This somebody looks like, yes, I would do business with, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so let's flip. Okay, so there's any more? You pull on any? Okay. All right, so once again, I wish we could go through it all, but it would kind of, we'd see it over the class, but I just want you to get an understanding what to look at on your credit report, because just looking at that summary, we'll see where you need to drill down and figure out like where you need to make payments, where you need to catch up. And people always ask, like, if one card is maxed and the other card has zero balance on it, you have to make sure that overall, like, you're not putting cards, making them look desperate in any way. So if you can bring down the balance on your highest balance card, high interest cards, bring them down so that they look like there's some available cash on them, so that it shows that you're being responsible with your credit. Any questions? All right, let's compare cash versus credit. Who still loves paying things via cash? Anybody pay cash versus credit, or rather pay credit?
I do.
Who pays cash?
We got a bunch of people
that pay cash?
Both sides.
Okay, so tell me, somebody that says they pay cash, what are they getting when they pay cash? Cash is still king. Okay, so who's that person? David, why do you say cash is still king?
You could usually there are some stores, well, around my neighborhood that don't take card at all. So
okay, by default you have to, but what about those that do pay card and cash? You still pay cash?
Yeah. Because,
why is that?
Because I usually find it easier, mostly. Because, like, I, with the card, I have to fiddle around with the machine. But with cash, it's always at hand. You can count it. You can see it.
Okay, let's go to Christine. You said you use your debit card. Why is that? Christine, you there? Okay, let's go to Mercedes. Mercedes, you said you might not owe anything if you use cash as opposed to credit. Explain.
If you use your credit card, then you're going to owe payments as opposed to if you just use cash. I guess you don't really owe anything.
Okay.
I mean, I guess maybe you would, but it would be less.
It'd be less. How is that?
I'm not really sure.
All right, let's go to somebody that says they use their card. I saw some people that say they use their card. I try to always use my card, so that's Maria. Maria, sorry. You try to use my card. Why is that?
So I saw someone say that, when it's like a really, really big purchase, or I use my credit card because of cashback, you know, you get cashback and all that. And I pay it off right away because I have the money for it. So I pay it off right away. So I don't see any, like, you know, any interest or anything. I just pay it off. But if it's like a small purchase, like in store, like maybe for a dollar or two, I try to pay cash because there's no point, you know?
Okay. So here's my answer. Take it for what it's worth. Cash is dead. When you use cash, whatever you're paying for cash, you're just getting that one item. So, for example, if I go to the store and I'm buying a pair of shoes, I give them cash, I get the shoes, and the transaction is complete. Correct? Everybody agree to that?
Yes.
Yes.
But when you use credit, your money works in three different ways. And this is what the thing about being financial literacy, thinking of a wealth mindset. You want to max out the usage of your money. So when you pay on credit, you get to, your money works in three different ways. How so? You get the item. I would get the shoes, right? And like Ms. Ramirez said, I also gain rewards, points. Like, I use my rewards for travel. I haven't traveled since COVID, but I've piled up a lot of travel points. But you get rewards. You get points. Sometimes you get cash back, which I always encourage young people to get a cash back card, meaning that for every dollar you spend, you get 5 cents back. It may not seem like a lot, but every $100 you spend, you get $5 back. It's called cash rewards. And it gets back to what we just talked about in the credit report, where there's things on your credit report that are favorable, that are account positive, that bring up your score. That if you have a credit card and you're using it all the time and you're paying it off full every month, will that increase your credit score so you get future loans, mortgages at discount? Yes?
Yeah.
When you pay cash, there's no record, there's no reward other than the item that you're going to get. And the wealth mindset, you'll see the Warren Buffetts, the Jay-Z's, even our president, they will pull out a card. They'll pay on card because they want to make sure that their dollar is working in multiple ways. When you pay with a card, you get your dollar works in three different ways and you're building that relationship with that lending institution. But yes, you have to have the discipline to only, like Ms. Ramirez said, to only spend what you use, only spend what you can afford. And this is great for budgeting because I'm always finding ways in which to attack my budget. And most credit cards now, they have where you can see your spending habits. You can be like, oh my God, I went to Starbucks 10 times this month, spent $80. This is crazy. Let me cut back on Starbucks. You're not really going to feel that when you're doing cash. Or, oh my man, I'm always buying this item, or I can cut back on this. It makes you really see where your spending habits are and where the opportunities are. But you have to create that discipline to know that, you know, you will lose exactly if you pile things on a credit card and you don't pay it within the 30-day billing cycle. Because like we said, every card gives you a 30-day grace period in which to pay it off. Now, somebody say, well, I use my debit card. Debit card, yes, you get the item, you gain rewards, you increase your credit score. Everything you get with a credit card, you can most likely, if you find the right debit card, get with a debit card. The only thing is you don't play the game of using other people's money to make money. And that's that 30-day grace. That 30-day grace period can turn into 90 days, 120 days, 2 years sometimes, where you're building that relationship, understanding that how to leverage money. If you have a dollar and that dollar allows you to use it in three different ways, or that dollar gives you access to $300 in credit, you can leverage that credit to do other things. Like I always say, like, yes, I own multiple buildings in New York City, but I really only bought one building. From the first building I bought that I was able to save and use money from my 401k, which we'll talk about later, I was able to leverage the buildings and pull out equity, which is a loan in itself from the bank on the building to buy other buildings. And that's the point of using other people's money and leveraging credit. I hope I didn't go too fast in that explanation, but I hope it makes sense to you guys.
Can I jump in here real quick, Sean?
Absolutely.
I want to just mention that everything he's saying to you, it's there to keep you in a disciplined mindset. If you can't be disciplined with a little, so if you're buying small items with your credit card, it's very easy to pay those off and get in the habit of using your credit to pay off the smaller items that are easy to afford. And once that habit is established, then, you know, you also save yourself the worry of losing your money. So if you lose your credit card, you just call up, say, hey, I lost my card, and they have a record of when you called. Anybody uses it, it's not your fault. They won't charge you for it. But if you lose the money in your pocket, that money's gone. You will never get reimbursed for that. So that in itself gives you a big advantage over carrying money in your pocket and the habits that you acquire of utilizing credit in a productive fashion with discipline. And that's where we come in and teaching you that, because anything outside of that realm starts to devour you with debt. And we want to avoid that at all costs. All right, Sean.
Well, I'm going to actually add now, Jeff, I just think we should add, your money works for you in four different ways now, because Jeff just pointed out, when you pay by credit, you have an insurance that you don't realize. If you get scammed, if you get something that you don't like, that not what you expected, if you get a bad meal, if you get a product you ordered online, if you go to a store and you buy something, they're screwing you around, your credit card has insurance, protects you, meaning that you can call your credit card company and say, hey, I got item this, or I got service this, I didn't like it. I don't really think I should be paying for this. You can challenge it, and the person that sold it to you or the person that provided that service would have to prove that they didn't screw you over. So it's really like an insurance. And then you have warranties behind that as well. Like most credit cards, if I buy things on my American Express card, I have an extra warranty. Yeah. If something goes wrong with the product, like I just had a vacuum, something went wrong with it. I bought it in July, it stopped working. I called my credit card company, American Express. They have purchase protection is what they call it. No question, no problem. They credit me back the money for the vacuum. So I was able to buy a new vacuum, even though the original purchaser did not want to credit me. So you have all these things that are there for you as insurances, as rewards. It doesn't make sense in these current times just to use cash to get that one-to-one item. And some of you just said, well, $1, $2, I'll pay cash. And I think that's even a bad habit, because then you see, once you put everything on a card, it's a management process that you're going through. You're seeing how to budget better, how to see where you can save, and those dollars and $2 that you're spending on coffee or whatever, you realize, like, you know, instead of buying a Coke every time I go to the corner store, a Coke is $6.99. I spent $24 this month on just buying cans of Coke. Maybe I can buy a case for $6.99 and save $22 or $18, sorry. Make sense?
One quick point, one more last point I want to add is, as a person that has high credit, one of the reasons why my score is high is because I carry multiple cards. Now, I only use maybe two cards for personal, one card for business. Keep those other cards alive, I'll buy something at Starbucks, or I'll get something at Dunkin' Donuts, or I'm out and about and I'll buy something for, you know, maybe a couple of dollars. So the smaller purchases, I keep my cards alive, and that way they don't cancel my cards for non-use.
And I'll clarify one more thing. I think someone asked about debit cards, or like moving from debit to credit. A debit card, for all intents and purposes, is the same as cash, right? I don't think there are too many debit cards that I know of, if any, that provide the same rewards. So just because you have a card doesn't mean that it's giving you rewards. And like, I think the important thing, and we'll cover this later on, but you need to read the benefits and you need to read the rewards, right? Not all cards have that insurance that John was talking about. Not all cards give you the same amount of cash back. So the important thing is to do your homework, right? And so if you hold a debit card, you you should consider moving or applying for a credit card, even if it's, you know, let's say a lower tier credit card at first, to build that credit before you move up to the type of, you know, benefits that you can get that Sean talks about.
Exactly. And just to be clear again, so you guys understand where we're going with all this, this is not necessarily how the rich, you may say, I know some people are rich, they don't do this. This is not necessarily how the rich think. This is how the wealth think. This is a wealth mindset. There's a difference between wealthy and rich, you know. So if you, these are basic principles, like Jeff said, it may be numbers initially small, but the numbers begin to get bigger. You begin to get managing money in a better, more responsible way by just instilling these practices in your life. Does that make sense? I don't know if we have time to go through this week, Larry. Maybe we'll start this next week.
These are really important slides that we can go over next time about key terms that I'm sure all you guys have questions about. But we can save that for next time. We can save this for next time, since that depends on it. But since we were talking about benefits, Sean, do you think?
We can go through it. Go ahead, Larry. You can go through this quickly.
So a lot of people, right? Sean was talking about the rewards. You mentioned cash back. You mentioned the rewards. Some people on the chat mentioned secured cards. So I'll leave this out and I won't read everything, but basically, there are different types of credit cards and different types of rewards being offered, right? Your eligibility for these cards depends on your credit, right? And your credit score, your credit history, credit quality. So don't expect that you're going to get, you know, 5% cash back on your card from day one, right? If you have no credit history, as some people said, you might have to start off with a starter card, right? Where there's no fee on them, but your credit limit might be lower. Sometimes you might even have to have a secured card, which is basically you put in a deposit, which they hold in the event that you can't pay, right? So it's insurance for them, right? So that's for people with limited or damaged credit, if you will. But as you work your way up, you know, generally a lot of cashback cards, I think 2% is something that 1 or 2% is something that almost every card now can offer without without a fee. And then some of them, like a Discover card can have, or a Chase card can have, rotational benefits up to 5%. So again, as Sean has mentioned time and time again, don't be married to the brand, be married to what the card says.
Absolutely.
And do your
absolutely
home and figure out what it is. And as you work your way up, you know, the rewards are pretty great. Like the travel rewards, when you travel, you might get free upgrades. You might, you know, not have to pay for bags. You might get special status, same thing with hotels. You can earn credit card points, which can be redeemed for flights, hotels, gift cards, anything you want. You can redeem it as a statement on your credit card bill itself, right? And as you get higher and higher, that bang for your buck gets more. That being said, some of these cards come with fees, right? As high as I've seen $500-$600 a year for a card. And so you have to weigh the considerations. Are my benefits that I'm going to extract out of this card going to be likely to be more than what I'm paying as a fee? So that, you know, we can't tell you what's right. It depends on your spending patterns. But again, do your homework.
And I'll leave you guys with this. So you, this will make maybe clear things up. The wealth mindset is to pay for nothing and have value in everything that they do. Their time, they want that has to have value, has to be a cost with it. Everything they pay for, they want value. You know, the non-wealth mindset is like, I'm just going to spend, and, you know, I'm going to get nice. The wealth mindset is like, every dollar I spend, I want to rinse that dollar out. I want to get as much value for that dollar as possible. As much as possible. And you'll see wealthy people, like, you'll be like, why are they negotiating? Why are they so hard? They have all this money. But it's a discipline. It's something that sticks with you once you have that wealth mindset to know that everything, every dollar, if I spend, like for me, I try to service people. Any person that comes into my shipping store and buys and ships from me, whatever they have, whatever they're selling, I will support them because you have serviced me, so I will service you. And to me, that's me spending value in my dollar. So you have to have that wealth mindset that, hey, I don't care how much, if I make $20 an hour, $10 an hour, $3,000 an hour, every dollar you spend, you have to put value behind it. And you have to understand that how am I maximizing the return on what I'm spending on this item or service?
I hope that helps. Go ahead. Reiterate what you said as a summary to those individuals who have already too much credit and are not paying the whole thing off every month and maybe leaning towards a consolidation loan. That would give you the difference in the high interest you're paying and give you a pathway to paying everything off faster. So with what you learned today, consider learning a little more before you jump in and consolidate. But most important, and above all else, develop discipline, Sean is explaining, so that you don't fall back into the same trap with credit. And, you know, with that, I think we've all learned and covered a whole lot today.
Yep. And unfortunately, we don't have the time to answer all the questions on here. But if you've got any other questions, as we say every week, here are social media links. Feel free to reach out versus any of these formats. And you should be able to send a message to us and we'll try to do our best to reply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.